Support for Living on Earth comes from listeners like you. To make a donation, please use the link to the left of this webpage. And thanks.
Support for Living on Earth comes from the National Science Foundation and Stonyfield Farm.
From the Jennifer and Ted Stanley Studios in Somerville, Massachusetts, this is Living on Earth. I'm Steve Kerwood. The days have grown short and cold, the nights long and dark. In the Northern Hemisphere, we're not so far from that shortest day of the year. So it's time to put our daily duties aside to gather with family and friends. And here at Living on Earth, it's time for us to put our coverage of environmental news on the back burner to fire up some fresh storytelling. This year, for our winter storytelling special, we turn to the East. Three Asian American artists bring us their true tales of tough times, triumph, and cultural tightrope walking. So first, we'd like to welcome Tu Jiesheng, a Hmong American storyteller, hip-hop artist, and comedian. He tells us the tale of his journey from the hot jungles of Laos to the cold winters of Minnesota. Welcome, Tu Jie.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Also with us is stage artist and writer Brenda Wong Aoki. She brings us a story of how she bonded with her grandfather over pickled chicken's feet and blankets of seaweed. Hello, Brenda.
Hi. Thanks for having me here.
And storyteller Megumi tells us about one man's life growing up in a Japanese-American internment camp in World War II and how his cartoons gave voice to an imprisoned community. Megumi, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me here.
So, Brenda, let's start with you. What kind of memories does this time of year bring up for you?
Well, it reminds me of when I was a girl. I have four sisters and a brother and my mom and my dad, and it reminds me of wearing matching dresses. My mom used to make all of her own clothes, and she'd make them out of the same bolt, and she really liked polka dots. So she'd make five little polka dotted dresses for me and my sisters, and my brother and my dad would have shirts to match. And every time we'd go out, like, you know, to a busy place like downtown or something, we'd be wearing these matching polka dot clothes. So in case any of us got lost, somebody would find us and bring them back, right? That was our holiday attire.
A holiday attire. So, of course, this time of year, what kind of food would your family make?
Tomato beef chow mein with crispy noodles. And it was our favorite thing at Christmas time. And we always make jok after a big holiday. If your mom's Chinese, that's what you have.
Jok? What's jok?
Jok is this rice gruel soup. It's like a gumbo.
A gumbo.
It's just plain, and then you just keep adding stuff to it. You just throw stuff in.
Sounds good. I'm getting hungry already.
It's good.
Now, your mom was raised in an orphanage in the San Francisco area, as I understand it, but your mom has always had a relationship with her father, despite not growing up with him. Could you tell us a story about your relationship with your grandfather?
Well, my grandpa lived in an old tin roof shack. No electricity, no running water. He never really learned English, and his strange, gruff ways used to scare me. I can remember my first trip to Grandpa's. I was about six. Along the way, we saw this sign, and I had just learned how to read. It said, "How long?" That confused me. But then my mother explained that How Long was Grandpa's best friend. They had come together from Canton, China, when they were 18 years old. And then I saw a dwarf, right out of Snow White. It was Grumpy. Nope, it was Grandpa. Inside his shack, there were these frogs, big as your head, riveting in the sink. Ribbit, ribbit, ribbit. I handed my grandpa a bunch of flowers my mother had given me. Mama, he won't take it. You see, it turns out that to some old-fashioned Chinese, cut flowers, they're an omen of death. Grandpa thought I wanted to kill him or something. Mono juk tao, juk tao, stupid bamboo head. That night, we all lay down on blankets of seaweed. Seaweed, because that's what my grandpa did. He gathered seaweed off the rocks, and he sold them to people in Chinatown, marked fresh from Hong Kong. So we slept on that seaweed as it was drying. It was so dark in there you couldn't see your hand in front of your face. And I remember, "Mama, I gotta go to the bathroom." Mom handed me this metal pail. "What's this for?" "You know." "You mean, uh-huh. We call it a thunder bucket." And that's what I remember from my first trip to Grandpa's. We returned to Grandpa's when I was about 11. That summer, I found myself wearing men's galoshes, Grandpa's overalls, and this big coolie hat. I looked totally FOB, man, fresh off the boat. This was not my idea of a nice summer. I was going to be home in L.A. in a bikini, body surfing with my friends, listening to my transistor radio, and here I was looking like an FOB in this big old silly hat, helping Grandpa. At 3 or 4 in the morning, whatever time the tide was low, his little green flashlight leading the way, we'd climb down the cliffs on these little teeny steps my grandpa had hewn from the rock. I was slipping and sliding, trying to my best to keep up with Grandpa's short, stocky legs. When we got down there, all around us were tide pools. Tide pools like you can't see anymore. Tide pools with pink and green sea anemones, orange starfish, little baby octopus, shells, golden light. They're just beautiful, but Grandpa would say, "Fidee, Fidee, hurry up." Twist and pull and throw in the basket, we gathered seaweed. Twist and pull and throw in the basket. The barnacles were really bad on your nails. Twist and pull and throw in the basket. Twist and pull and throw in the basket. "I do not want to be here." Twist and pull and throw in the basket. Twist and pull and watch wave. What do you mean, Grandpa? Watch waves. Whoa. This was dangerous work. One false step and Mother Ocean ate you up. At sunset, Grandpa would gather those wet baskets of seaweed, put them on this long bamboo pole. You know, he had this groove in his shoulder that pole fit perfectly in, sort of like a puzzle piece. We'd get back to his shack. He'd light a fire in the stove, shoo the frogs out the sink. "Go now. Go. Go. Take a great big walk and make dinner. Shh." Sometimes on special occasions, Grandpa would bring out a Chinese delicacy, pickled chicken feet. Little toenails clicking, he'd walk them across the table towards me. He loved to do that. After supper, Grandpa would take 180-proof Chinese whiskey, pour it in a teacup, and in another he'd pour me tea. He'd say, "This for me, this for company." He'd light a big stogie, look me in the eye and say, "Ablenda, Ablenda. Brenda House School." Brenda House School. That was Grandpa's favorite American line, Brenda House School. Because you see, in Chinese, words take on different meanings if you change the intonation. So Grandpa would change his tones and think he was saying a whole bunch of American words. Our conversation used to go something like this.
"Now, Brenda House School."
"Grandpa, tide pools are cool."
"Brenda House School."
"Tomorrow, can we take a day off?"
"Brenda House School."
We used to talk like that for hours. At the end of the summer, Grandpa poured gasoline on the rocks and torched them. He said you had to do that so that the new seaweed could grow. All night, we watched the flames on the waves. The next day when my parents picked me up, I gave Grandpa a big kiss on his bald head right between those two floppy ears, and he said to me,
"You go now. Go.
Go. And he stood there with that little green flashlight. And I swear that beam never wavered until we'd gone all the way up the mountain and dropped over the crest. My grandpa died when I was in college. And we buried him up near San Francisco in the Chinese cemetery behind Home Depot. Everybody put cut flowers on his grave. But I remembered and brought a small green plant that still had its roots.
Now, your mom has roots in China and your dad has roots in Japan?
Yeah, we're Pake, Burihe, Chican, and Haole. Chinese, Japanese, Spanish, actually, and Scots-Irish.
Okay, so what was it like growing up with such a unique background?
It was great. I just thought the whole world was like that. I grew up on a naval base. I thought we were all like this.
Naval base where?
Long Beach.
And then I understand, what, you moved to the Bay Area? And there you learned a lot more about your family, I imagine.
It was a big surprise to me, but my grand uncle was probably the first Japanese to marry a Caucasian person. He ran away with the daughter of the Archdeacon of Grace Cathedral in 1909.
Right next to Chinatown there in San Francisco.
Yeah, and that was our literal fall from grace, because after that our family was looked down upon because those times, miscegenation laws and things.
What happened to this white woman?
Well, God, she was amazing. She fled with her children into the Sierra foothills during the internment. Her daughter said, Mama knew those camps, you know, talking about the internment camps, Mama knew those camps weren't going to be no picnic. So they went up into the Sierra foothills and passed the kids off as Indians.
We're dishing up Asian American stories for our holiday season program today, and there's plenty more to come from Brenda Wong Aoki and our other storytellers. So stick around and keep listening to Living on Earth.